Well, hello and welcome to this month's podcast, where, as ever, we're going to bring you up to date with the latest information and data in the world of rheumatology, and what a wonderful world that is. Now, today I'm going to review two papers that add to our knowledge base around common therapeutics relating to rheumatoid arthritis. The first paper, Jürgen Reck and colleagues present the results of the ARIA study, which shows that abatacept inhibits inflammation symptoms and progression to RA in high-risk patients. Common theme here, a lot of thought about pre-RA and interception studies, very interesting data. And then our second paper comes from Mark Russell and colleagues and talks about changes in JAK inhibitor prescriptions following a series of EMA warnings. And as ever, if you want to have a look at summary slides of the papers discussed today, go along to the imedforum.com, imedforum, all one word, .com. Fabulous resource. It's our new name for what has always been a terrific place to go if you're looking for the up-to-date information. Okay, well, the first paper is entitled Abatacept Inhibits Inflammation and Onset of Rheumatoid Arthritis in Individuals at High Risk, that's ARIA, a randomized international multi-center double-blind placebo-controlled trial. Well, I think most of us are familiar with the concept that anti-citrullinated protein antibodies act as and subclinical inflammatory changes in joints and tendon sheaths are present in people who are at high risk of developing rheumatoid within a relatively short time period, the latter ill-defined. And we need to think about what we do with such people. Should we be treating them? And if so, according to which strategy? This is the concept of interception. Is there an ultra-early stage of the process that ultimately culminates in synovitis and bone functional loss? Is there an early intervention stage that could prevent that? And there are only a few studies of this nature in the literature to which ARIA is now added. Well, the objective of ARIA was to assess whether six-month treatment with abatacept improves inflammation in preclinical RA, and around 98 patients were included in the study. They had current or past history of joint pain, but no current or past joint swelling. They tested positive for ACPA and had evidence of subclinical synovitis, tenosynovitis, or osteitis on MRI of the dominant hand. Patients were randomized 1-to-1 to abatacept to placebo for a six-month treatment period. Remember, the six-month placebo, because ostensibly these people have no clinically evident disease, although there's an imaging abnormality. And the following 12 months were the drug-free observational phase. And at the end of the 18-month study, 26 patients remained for the abatacept group and 21 remained for the placebo group. Okay, so what are the key results? Well, the abatacept group had a higher proportion of male patients and current smokers compared to the placebo group. Disease characteristics that affect progression to RA, however, were similar between the two treatment groups. In the first 3 months of the study, no RA diagnosis occurred in the abatacept group, while there was an increase in diagnosis in the placebo group. The mean RA-free survival time for abatacept was 14.7 months, which was significantly higher than that for the placebo group at 11.15 months. The average swollen joint counts were lower in the abatacept group at 6 to 12 months than in the placebo group at 0 to 6 months. And mean swollen joint counts were lower in the abatacept than placebo in 6 and 18 month periods. It's quite a complicated study to interpret, but the key conclusion is that 6 months of abatacept treatment reduces MRI inflammation, clinical symptoms, and the risk of development of RA in this high risk group. The effects of the intervention in the abatacept group persist through a 1 year drug-free observation phase. And it suggests that some kind of secondary prevention of RA is feasible via modulation of the T-cell pathway, which is targeted by abatacept. Remember, it's a checkpoint regulator. I think a lot more work needing to be done here. We'll probably talk about the APIPRA study, which also looked at abatacept in a pre-RA high-risk group at a podcast coming to you very soon. And when we look at all of those things together, we can maybe start to think about whether this is going to be a realistic clinical intervention. It's certainly an area in which trialing is now feasible and possible. And if that's the only conclusion we can draw from this, then I actually think it's quite an important and positive conclusion. And my congratulations to the authors for doing what is not an easy study. Well, the second paper is entitled The Influence of Safety Warnings on the Prescription of JAK Inhibitors. I think we're all aware that the EMA has issued three warnings about JAK inhibitors. The first warning, imaginatively entitled Warning 1, happened in November 2019 when the EMA highlighted the risk of venous thromboembolism and infection with tofacitinib. Second warning in March 2021 added cancer and major cardiovascular events to the list of risks associated with tofacitinib, and the list of risks was expanded to all JAK inhibitors with a third warning in November 2022. Now, this correspondence presented the results of an ecological study on trends in prescribing for JAK inhibitors at a population level. The authors used nationwide prescribing data available in England and prescribing data from 1st January 2019 to 31st August 2023 were collected for tofacitinib, baricitinib, upadacitinib, and filgotinib. So what were the key findings? Well, the number of people prescribed JAK inhibitors in England quadrupled from 4,792 in January 2019 to 19,985 in August 2023. Following warning one, which was, remember, about the risk of venous thromboembolism with TOFA, the rate of the increase in tofacitinib prescriptions slowed. Tofacitinib prescriptions slowed further with warning two, then decreased once again after warning three. Baricitinib prescribing trends consistently increased until warning two, where its rate of increase slowed and then decreased with warning three. In contrast, prescriptions for upadacitinib and filgotinib continued to increase despite being included in warning three. Upadacitinib had a sharper increase than filgotinib following warning three. So again, actually quite an interesting data set, I think quite difficult to interpret in context of the real world. The prescribing rate of upadacitinib, filgotinib, has increased regardless of safety warnings being expanded to all JAK inhibitors. But we really need more time to determine whether the JAK selectivity is translating into a meaningful difference in safety profile. Is that, for example, influencing prescribing practice? Or are these simply newer medicines that arrived at a different time span and perhaps in the minds of general prescribers have not yet been fully aligned? I'm not entirely sure we can understand this. And for that reason, I think these data are absolutely fascinating, but I'd quite like to learn a bit more about them and see them replicated in other prescribing populations, for example. Well, that's what I brought to you today. If you want to see the publications uploaded this month or indeed access other podcasts and resources, head across to our new iamidforum.com. It's a great place. I love it. I hope you will too. Don't forget to subscribe to the new Immune-Mediated Inflammatory Disease Forum podcast channel to make sure you don't miss our podcast in the future. And as always, make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a review. And thank you very much for your attention. I hope this has been helpful to you. I hope it drives forward safe and effective prescribing and management of people with rheumatic musculoskeletal diseases. Thanks very much indeed. Bye for now.